Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Doc Thompson, and he'll be answering your most important questions on the wild rivers of northern New Mexico. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Doc a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. The broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Doc Thompson about the wild rivers of northern New Mexico. Our approach is simple, education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to fly fishing magazines. It is one of only a few magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like short line nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting and educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription to Fly Fusion today so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. Well, before we introduce Doc, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Doc's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. You can visit their website at frontrangeanglers.com. This gift certificate can be redeemed in their store or through their online store if you should win. Now, here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show, and the question will be about something Doc and I talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage, and if you're the first person to do that correctly, then you win the $20 gift certificate. Well, tonight our guest is Doc Thompson. Doc started High Country Anglers in 1995, thinking he could make a living being a fly fishing guide. Well, he's still alive. His first exposure to New Mexico was as a young child on family trips to northern New Mexico and southern Colorado. Doc's early trips to New Mexico influenced him in working and fishing at the Philmont Boy Scout Ranch in the 1980s and early 90s. Doc moved to New Mexico shortly after graduating from the University of Missouri. Doc is known for his patience and calm demeanor when guiding and likes to mix education into guide trips. He's eager to boost the learning curve of beginners or provide timely advice with new tricks for the old dogs. As Doc says, all guides love to fish, but I also love to guide. Doc also organizes small fishing trips to South America and Central America each winter. In addition to guiding full-time, Doc is an Orvis contract fly tire and designer with many favorite patterns featured in the Orvis catalog, Orvis News, and Southwest Fly Fishing magazine. He presents a number of educational programs at fly shops and fly fishing clubs throughout the country each year. And Doc contributes articles and photos to popular fly fishing magazines and has contributed to such books as Fly Fishing Northern New Mexico and Freshwater Fly Fishing Tips from the Pros. Doc is a charter member of Trout Unlimited's Guide Outfitter Business Program and a charter member of Enchanted Circle Trout Unlimited. Doc was honored as the 2006 Orvis Endorsed Guide of the Year and the 2005 Orvis Fly Tire of the Year. Well, Doc, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hi, Roger. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the show and to talk about fly fishing in northern New Mexico.
Well, sounds good. Now, did you get out and fish today?
Yes, out on the water today, and mostly all day, really, for that matter, out on the Cimarron River.
Okay.
Which is basically a small tailwater that flows out of Eagle Nest Lake, and had a fairly steady day today.
Good, good, yeah. Good. Well, the weather's getting nice here in the Rockies, and time for a lot of fishing, huh?
It is.
Well, Let's start out with just talking a little bit about New Mexico as the state to fish in. Mark Simpkins in Seoul, Korea wrote in and asked, do you consider New Mexico fishing to be a year-round fishery?
I do. The state is extremely large. I believe it's the fifth largest state in the U.S. And, you know, just a lot of trout streams and lakes throughout the state. And so, yes, there some of the water is definitely, you know, fishable year-round. Some of the water just isn't due to, high elevation mountains. But, for example, probably the most famous year-round fishery in the state would be the San Juan River over in the northwestern region of the state, which I'm not, believe it or not, that familiar with. I fish it a few times here and there, but, so that's definitely year-round. The Rio Grande, one of the rivers we're going to talk about this evening, is basically a year-round fishery as well. And then there's several others scattered throughout the state that could be classified as year-round.
Okay. Then now the Cimarron and the Rio Costilla that we'll talk about tonight, are those fishable in winter months?
No, not really. And that's mostly due to the a combination of the elevation. For example, the Cimarron ranges in elevation anywhere from approximately 8,500 feet down to about 7,000 feet in elevation. And it's also a tailwater, so the flows during the winter months are pretty low. So we're not really seeing much, fishable flow. Plus, the winters along the Cimarron can be, extremely cold with lots of ice along the banks. You know, if we're fortunate here in the, basically in the Southwest to string together a few warm winter days, then yes, you can find a spot here and there that would be fishable. But to plan a trip for the Cimarron in the winter, no, not something you would plan on. And the same is true for the Rio Castilla.
Okay. Andy from Albuquerque was asking particularly about the Cimarron, but why don't you kind of just brief us on all three rivers as to the best times of year to fish each of these rivers?
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and start with the Cimarron. The Cimarron will start fishing most years in April. Depending on kind of the winter temperatures we encounter in April, it might be, if it's a warm April, it could be, as early as the first few days of April. If it's a pretty cold April, it might be late April. But for the most part, I look at starting to fish the Cimarron in April. And then usually by 1st of May, Cimarron's going well as far as water temperatures. Flows on the Cimarron, it's all based upon irrigation demands for farmers and ranchers downstream, on kind of down on the flat-type land. And that usually kicks up in early May, as does some runoff coming in. So usually by 1st of May, Cimarron's going. And then just continues all the way through May, June, July, August, and well into September. And what we encounter usually by the end of September, 1st of October, will be a combination of weather conditions. If it's an early start to winter, those cold temperatures start setting in the end of September, 1st of October, which, drops the water temperature and then slows the fishing down. And then the other aspect to the Cimarron in that late September, early October time frame is flows out of Eagle Nest Lake for irrigation. That's usually, late September, 1st of October, they start to shut down on the irrigation demands, and so the flow just becomes real low. And at that point, the trout are real skittish. And so, that's what we deal with during that late September, early October time frame. But May through September, definitely.
Okay, well, let's just continue on, and we'll talk about the season for each river as we come upon them. But before we dive into the Cimarron, just as a general note, what kind of fish are available in these three rivers? What species are we dealing with?
Well, the main overall species, trout. And in the Cimarron, it's predominantly wild brown trout. New Mexico Game and Fish does stock rainbows in the public water. And let's see, on the Rio Castilla, it is cutthroat, Rio Grande cutthroats, a hybrid called a cutbow, which is crossed between, cutthroats and rainbows. And then we see some rainbows. And then also occasionally we'll see a brown or a brookie in the Castilla. And then on the Rio Grande, it's predominantly wild browns. And then we also see some cutbows as well. And there's a few sections that get stocked with some rainbows.
Okay. Bill asked specifically about the Rio Grande cutthroat, something he wants to catch. So is that only available on the Rio Castilla?
No, it's not only available on the Castilla. The Rio Grande cutthroat are pretty limited these days. They only inhabit roughly 6, 7, 8% of their original home waters. The Rio Castilla is one of the few public streams that a person could catch some Rio Grande cutthroats. Some of the best Rio Grande cutthroat fishing and populations that just happen to be on private land. Some of those are available for fishing one way or another, such as Vermejo Park Ranch. But as far as public access, probably I would say the Rio Castilla.
Okay, is that a protected fish at this point? Or?
It's protected through the state as far as some of the regulations on some of those waters. For example, on the Castilla, it's all catch and release, and that's in an effort to help protect the Rio Grande cutthroat trout. As far as being on the endangered species list, no, not yet.
Okay, let's talk more about the Cimarron River. And first of all, these three rivers are all in basically kind of north-central New Mexico, correct?
Yes, if we're kind of to break the state down, then I would say yes, north-central slash northeastern. For example, the Cimarron River flows out of Eagle Nest Lake, which is in Eagle Nest, New Mexico. And then the Cimarron flows and basically parallels and crisscrosses U.S. Highway 64 and eventually comes through the town of Cimarron, New Mexico, which those are kind of more on the northeastern part of the state. The Rio Castilla is extremely far north, and then the Rio Grande is basically the Taos area, pretty much north-central New Mexico.
And the headwaters are actually up in Colorado, right?
Right, up high in the San Juan Mountains of Colorado.
Yeah, because it's Rio Grande is also a good fishery up in Colorado.
It is.
Good float river up there. Okay, so the Cimarron comes out of, you said, Eagle Nest Lake?
Yes, it flows out of Eagle Nest Lake. The lake was built in, I believe it was, you're testing my memory now, or I am, 1916 or 1918. And it was built specifically for the storage of irrigation water. And so technically it's a tailwater, and the lake is right there with the town of Eagle Nest. And the river comes out from the lake and flows and parallels Highway 64. All the way down to Cimarron, and it does eventually flow into the Canadian and then eventually into the Arkansas and then, the Mississippi. So it's, kind of technically, I guess, part of the Mississippi River system.
Right. You said it's kind of like a tailwater. Kind of explain, the river that you fish, what type of river is it? And if it changes, tell me about that. And where do you start fishing and where do you quit fishing? What sections do you fish?
Sure. I say like a tailwater. I mean, technically it is because there's the reservoir, the lake, and then the dam. And after that, there's not much resemblance of what we think of with a tailwater trout stream. It's much more like your classic mountain trout stream. It's kind of a small to medium size, anywhere from 10 to 20, 25 feet wide in average. And as far as water characteristics, there's just about everything you can imagine. There's short undercut banks. There's good riffle water. There's a lot of drop-offs, a lot of shelf lines, a lot of bubble lines, lots of pockets. So a great mix of water. If a person's going to fish any given, quarter mile to a half mile of the Cimarron, you're going to see a wide range of water features, water characteristics. The flows do fluctuate because it is a tailwater based upon irrigation demands. And as far as a fishable flow goes, as low as 5 CFS or 5 cubic feet per second for the low end, still very fishable. And then on the high end, you're looking at about 55 to 60 cubic feet per second. And then everything in between. Probably, to give it an average flow, it's going to be at about 35 CFS. And to me, you know, an ideal fly fishing flow is going to be in that 30 to 40 CFS range.
Okay. So now do you start fishing the river right below the lake or the dam there?
You can, actually. If we start at the dam and work our way down river, downstream, the first from the dam down approximately half to three-quarters of a mile is privately owned, and there is access to fish it through a club, a fly fishing club, and so members of the club can fish that. And then after that, and that's where this kind of nicknamed the holy water. And then from...
Has that come from, holy smokes, what a fee I have to pay to this club? Or
you know, there's a couple theories behind that. But no, it's a long-standing nickname for it. Just some really nice wild browns and rainbows in there. And so that's kind of where that nickname originated from, you know, years ago. And, you know, as the fly fishing scene evolves over the years, you know, sometimes nicknames can be construed for, you know, and have hidden meanings to them. But it's a real fun stretch of water. It is.
Now, when you say it's a club, can you pay a fee to the club as just a one-time shot for the day?
Or? Yes, there is. You can. Okay. And then the club does, the outfit that manages it, Solitary Angler, it does allow some guided day trips on there. I, from time to time, will take some people in there based upon availability. This holy water section is extremely flow dependent, and what I mean by that is it's highly dependent upon releases from the lake and dam, because there's no little teeny tributaries that feed into it until you're at the very bottom end of what we call the holy water, and then a teeny stream called Toby Creek flows in. And at that point, where Toby Creek flows in, flowing downstream for approximately 9 to 10 miles, is public access water. And that is in the Cimarron Canyon State Park in the Colin Neblett Wildlife Area.
Topography look like in that area?
It's a fairly narrow, steep canyon.
Oh, okay.
It's deceiving because there's a U.S. highway that flows right through there. Basically parallels and crisscrosses the river in a number of places. So even though it's in a narrow, deep canyon, the access is very easy because of the highway right there. And the public water in the state park, like I said, 9 to 10 miles of water, and it's all very easy access. There's a small handful of paved pullouts, and then there's numerous little side dirt pull-offs, you know, big enough for one vehicle, maybe two vehicles.
Basically anywhere in that stretch you can just get out and fish.
Exactly. And, you know, as most state parks do, there's a day use fee. And those are easy. There's lots of little pay stations, and I believe it's a $5 day use fee. Or, you know, if a person's fairly regional, it may be to their advantage to buy an annual pass. And so after the, as you're coming downstream, 9 to 10 miles of the public access, it flows into private water again, private land. There's a real tiny little community called Ute Park, and so it flows through Ute Park for 2 to 3 miles, and it's scattered with lots of little summer cabins, so the access there is private and limited. And then from there, going downstream flows into the Philmont Boy Scout Ranch, for approximately 8 miles. And then you have about 3 miles of private land through the Vermejo Park Ranch. And then at that point, it hits the town of Cimarron, and by then you're basically out of the trout water.
Okay, okay.
And so as far as you know, general public access, you're looking at 9 to 10 miles, and that's okay. In the Cimarron Canyon State Park and Colin Neblett Wildlife Area.
And it sounds like this river is too small to float in any kind of craft, really. It's all
most wade. Definitely. It's strictly wade. Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
What to you makes the Cimarron such a special river and place to fish?
Oh, wow. That's a number of reasons. One is the wild brown trout population. It is based upon population surveys through New Mexico Game and Fish. Approximately 16,000 browns per mile. And out of those, they estimate not quite half are what they call catchable size. What they're calling catchable size That's kind of the mystery here. As you know, it's...
it's you know, bigger than a size 12 hook.
I suppose, but it's loaded with, you know, I kind of nicknamed it, or dubbed it a wild brown trout fishery factory. It's just loaded with wild browns. Yeah. You know, most of them are going to be in the public water. You're looking at, you know, roughly 8 to 12 inches in size. Some stretches you'll see some larger ones. Some of the private water, like the holy water, and then there's a couple other stretches of private water available for guide trips below the town of Ute Park that I guide. And there we see the average size is up because it's private. You don't have the fishing pressure. And so on that private water, you'll see 10 to 14 inch wild browns.
What size do the browns need to be to breed?
We start seeing some of the breeding or the spawning reproducing size around that 10-inch range.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and it's, you know, part of the smallness is kind of due to the flow situation here. You know, they basically come the end of September, early October, cut the flow off until the following spring. So you limit kind of with that flow, you limit some of the growth potential. And there's some efforts underway to try and, you know, develop some type of a winter-type flow. But that's, you know, something I've been working on for years and a long way away probably.
Yeah, it's a thing to strive for because I know it's been very – we just had an interview on the Kootenai River up in Montana, and Dave Blackburn was instrumental in getting the flows up there regulated and has turned that fishery all around. So – it's worth the effort, huh?
It is. And, you know, historically there's been kind of a winter flow on the Cimarron, kind of by hook or crook, so to speak, through a combination of problems with the headgates on the dam. We had a number of years where, you know, the headgates couldn't be closed all the way. And so we did have for a number of years a, you know, not really a fishable flow, but a good, healthy winter flow that, you know, allowed for the trout to hold over, the browns to really maintain a little bit larger size on average. But like I said, on the private water, especially the private water below the town of Ute Park, you know, there's more water there, plus it's deeper water with a lot more bend pools. And so that, along with the combination of being privately managed, you know, where the fishing pressure is limited, you know, naturally produces some slightly larger browns on average.
Yeah. Doc, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk more about the Cimarron and, of course, the Rio Castilla and the Rio Grande.
Great.
So hang tight. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk weight and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. They're located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Doc Thompson about wild rivers of northern New Mexico. If you'd like to ask Doc a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, so more about the Cimarron here. Martin Coleman, Lawrence, Kansas. Before we do that, before we dive back in there, I did want to ask you, Doc, about what's happening in your fly fishing world. Tell us a little bit about your business and any other things that you're involved with in fly fishing.
Sure. My guide service is Doc Thompson's High Country Anglers, and basically a one-man operation. I'm an Orvis-endorsed fly fishing guide. And as far as that goes, I've been a few years ago honored as the Orvis-endorsed fly fishing guide of the year, and a year or two before that, the Orvis fly tire of the year. And basically, I provide guide/instructional service fly fishing throughout northern New Mexico, which covers a vast area. As far as the fishing scene right now, things are coming along good. We have, we had a really wet and heavy snow winter, and so we have a lot of good runoff this year, which is needed for streams. So it's kind of like changing the oil in a vehicle. Without it, you're in trouble. We're real fortunate that we have a couple of streams that handle the runoff exceptionally well, and so they're fishing good now. One of them's the Cimarron River. The other one is a section of the Rio Castilla. And so those are going good right now, and just excited to have that great snow melt and runoff that's needed to carry us through the fall season.
What is your website if people want to get a hold of you?
My website address is www.flyfishnewmexico.com.
Okay, flyfishnewmexico.com.
Yes, sir. It's just all one word, all spelled out.
Okay, great, great. Well, we have got some questions coming in on the Internet. I'm just trying to read through a few of them. Okay, here's a question. Rod Brashear is in Amarillo. He must get up to your part of the...
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
He says, and this is what you were just speaking to, who is controlling the Eagle Nest Dam, and who do you think at any time will increase the flow of the Cimarron River during the brown trout spawn?
Sure, great question. The Eagle Nest Lake and Dam was privately built, like I said, about 1916, somewhere in that time frame. Approximately 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago now, the state of New Mexico purchased the lake and the dam from the ranch that owned it, from the family that actually originally had built it. And so now it's under management by the state of New Mexico. As far as who controls the flows, it's a mixed bag. The owners, the water right owners, who predominantly are farmers and ranchers, are allotted X amount of water per year based upon how much water is available. And that's all has all been figured out through the years through the court system. And it's kind of the court system that mandates, tells what kind of water is available. The Cimarron River does have what's called a water master, and he's the one that's kind of in charge of administering the water rights, who can take what water when. And then the dam is there, and so based upon what kind of demands for water is needed is based upon how much water gets let out of the dam. And that, as far as the possibilities of establishing some type of a minimum flow for the winter months, it's just one of those challenges that exists in life. We as fly fishing people, of course, see it through the eyes of how can we benefit the trout. All the water is mandated for irrigation needs. There's a little bit of it set up for drinking water. And so those people that own the water rights see it, for why they own it, for their crops and for the agricultural purposes. And then also some of the little teeny communities have a little bit for drinking water. And so, it's one of those situations that there's no simple solution, unfortunately. I think sometimes the fly fishing scene can sometimes get a bad rap trying to demand things.
Yeah.
And so, this is a very small, close-knit region right through here that the Cimarron flows through. Anybody that lives in this area is directly impacted by what the Cimarron's doing, whether it's from agriculture or from some form of tourism. It's just one of those things that takes a lot of visiting and a lot of figuring out and a lot of, being patient and, working things through. There's been some slight progress over the years, so it's not, it's definitely not a lost cause.
It's one of those, right now we're essentially fighting wars over oil, but in the future we're going to be fighting wars over water, I think.
And this state, has been from day one.
Yeah, the water rights is incredibly critical in the West. Rod also wrote in here right after that. He says the Cimarron is the best brown trout fishery in the state of New Mexico. So he must have fished up.
Yes, he does. I know Rod.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
He's listened to all our shows, and he's always writing in great questions. So thanks, Rod.
Right.
And I know he's done a lot of fishing, so he must to impress him had to have been significant fishery to do that. We got from Rick in Littleton, Colorado, asked about fishing the outlet of Eagle Nest Lake. I think you already addressed that. You really can't because that's private water, right?
Right.
Unless you come through the club, yeah.
Right, yeah. You know, if you're not a member of the club, you know, and somebody wants to go in and fish it for the day, you know, can either contact myself
right.
or they can contact Solitary Anglers.
Okay, and question, Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas, he's asking about fly fishing techniques on smaller streams like the Cimarron and Rio Castilla, and what types of gear would be using and how one would, should approach the water compared to larger rivers. So tell us a little bit about the Cimarron. Is it kind of standard gear there, or do you size down? What kind of what size rod do you use there? And
there's kind of a wide range, like all water has, as far as equipment is concerned. The public water, which is, you know, approximately 9-10 miles in length, is fairly thick with a lot of vegetation, a lot of cottonwoods, a lot of willows. Some areas it's fairly well canopied. Some areas it's not canopied, it's just thick right along the banks. And so probably the A number one technique as far as approaching the water is to just ease in, and you're going to be working and wading your way upstream. You know, whether you're going to be smack right in the middle, you may be positioned to one bank side or the other based upon what kind of, you know, vegetation's in the way. As far as equipment and rod selection, the Cimarron's just ideal 3-weight and 4-weight water. You know, you're not dealing with 18-inch browns, although, you know, every once in a while one's landed. But for the most part, 3-weight, 4-weight. And personally, I'm a fan of the longer rods. You know, a lot of the 3-weights out there are, you know, 7 foot, 7.5 foot in length. And I think those are actually a drawback a lot of times. You know, we're using a lot of short line casting techniques, you know, whether it's short line roll casting, sometimes bow and arrow casts, doing a lot of short, you know, kind of like high stick nymphing techniques, even with dry flies. And so I think that short rod can really limit the person. And so I'm a big fan of the longer ones, you know, the 8-foot 3-weights, the 8-foot 4-weights, 8-foot 4-inch 3-weights, 8.5 foot, you know, 3-weights and 4-weights. And I think that extra length is really important when you're doing some high rod or high stick techniques. Plus, it gives you that little extra leverage when you're using real short casts and doing a, you know, small little roll cast. That little extra leverage is nice to have.
Yeah.
And then the other advantage to the longer rod is that I found in areas where it is a little bit thicker with the vegetation, you can actually kind of weave the rod through instead of you having to crawl through some of the vegetation.
Yeah.
You know, from that standpoint, that helps out. You know, of course, everybody has their own personal preferences, so.
So the water is basically at a depth that you can pretty much, once you're in the water, work your way all around and do most of your fishing all your way.
Sure. You know, based upon the flow, you know, the flow is going to play a factor in how deep the water is. But for the most part, typical summertime flow that you're going to have, you know, you're not going to really be wading in much more than about knee deep or so. So as far as waders go, I'm a big fan of hip waders. Don't really need anything else. You know, if you have chest waders, you know, you can always roll them down and wear them as waist highs. I know a number of people will wet wade, especially, you know, like in June, which tends to be a little bit of a sunny month for us. You know, wet wading is definitely an option.
Now, we got a question on the Internet from Rick Pangle in Littleton, Colorado. It says, seems like the early season is dominated by excessive runoff here in Colorado. I fish mostly the high mountains, but have been willing to make the drive to New Mexico. What rivers would be mostly fishable in the early part of the year, late part of the year? So we talked a little bit about that. Is runoff a concern for the Cimarron, or is it pretty much clear through runoff season?
That's a great question. The Cimarron handles runoff exceptionally well. And a lot of that's due to the lake. You know, most of the thick, heavy, nasty part of runoff goes into Eagle Nest Lake. And then the Cimarron itself, the river itself, does receive some direct runoff through several, you know, small, tiny little tributaries. Most of that runoff that's coming in is on the cleaner side. And that's a combination of, being in this steep canyon, you don't have much of an agricultural impact. You don't have much of a logging impact. And so the runoff tends to be on the fairly clean side. It's going to, you know, boost the flow up, definitely. But most of the time, the runoff that we see, like right now in the Cimarron, is not a muddy runoff. You know, the water will be up and the water's stained, but definitely very fishable. So the Cimarron does, it's known throughout the Southwest as being a river that handles runoff exceptionally well.
So if Rick was to drive down there, he's pretty much assured he's going to have some decent water to fish and not blow.
Well, it can never guarantee anything, of course. But yes, you know, conditions right now are really well. Coming out of the lake, there's only approximately 5 to 6 cubic feet per second. But by the time you get down towards Ute Park and through some of that private water just below Ute Park where I was today, you know, we're seeing flows at about 45 CFS to 50 CFS. And so, you know, we do have some runoff coming in, but it's not a negative runoff. It's a positive runoff.
Okay. A question from Bruce in Longmont, Colorado. Says my in-laws live in Raton, so they often try to fish together. He asked about public access for the Cimarron. We already talked about that. He's also asked about the insect hatches. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what we got going on there for hatches and maybe a few of your favorite flies to match those hatches.
Sure. Well, we'll start with kind of what's starting right now. You know, the very end of May, 1st of June, so this time frame, we start to see a golden stonefly hatch. And that's kind of the first large insect that we see, or the Cimarron sees, coming out of winter. And it's size-wise anywhere from 12 down to a 14, you know, sometimes like a 13. So that's what we're looking at, kind of a good meaty insect for the first big hatch of the, you know, coming out of winter time. The kind of hatch that, you know, if you've ever fished a stonefly hatch, you know that, you know, trout kind of put their guard down. You know, they're not skittish, they're very eager. And that's the golden stonefly hatch here. So we often use on the dry fly a size 12 or a size 14 orange or gold stimulator. I have a fly pattern that Orvis carries called the Doculator, and it's designed to imitate that adult golden stonefly as well. So for dry flies, those are basically the two options I'm going with. If you're going to, you know, want to, looking for a nymph to kind of imitate the golden stonefly, you know, a good all-around one's going to be about a size 10 or a size 12 hare's ear nymph. There's a stonefly nymph that I've developed, you know, from being on the Cimarron, Lewinsky stonefly nymph. That's a size 12 and imitates the golden stonefly nymph. And so that's kind of the hacks that we're kind of gearing up for now. In fact, today I saw saw two or three of the adults flying around. And that hatch will continue and pick up an increase throughout June. And it usually starts to taper down the end of June, but the browns will still be keyed on them usually through about July 4th. So basically into that first week of July. And then coming right after that, we start to see a good combination of some mayflies. We'll see a few drakes. We'll see a few PMDs. And then we also start seeing our caddis. And that basically kicks off, like I said, early July. About mid to late July, we'll start seeing some trichos on the Cimarron. And it's a real fun hatch to fish, even though the trichos are pretty tiny, size 20, size 18. You know, it's a good time that if a person's really moving through the water real soft and quietly and really paying attention to the water, you can see fish rising during the mornings on that tricho hatch. And so that will continue most years through from about mid-July through August and early September. And, of course, you know, the trichos will fall, will be a spinner fall for them later in the afternoon and early evening time. And then usually by, early August to mid-August, you know, we're still seeing some caddis, we're still seeing the trichos. That's also when the terrestrials will start up. We'll start, you know, seeing more and more hoppers. We'll start to see some beetle activity. And that will carry through the terrestrials, including some ants. That'll carry through usually into, you know, 1st of September, some years if it's, you know, kind of that warmer September. That'll continue well into mid-September with the terrestrials. And then usually coming out of near that end of September time frame, you know, midges become a little bit more important. Every now and then we'll start to see a blue-wing olive then. And, you know, usually by the first mid-October, things have really slowed down on the Cimarron. But if conditions warrant fishing, then, you know, looking at a lot of midge activity from then through the winter months.
Okay, okay. We need to take a quick break again, but we'll come back and we'll finish up with the Cimarron and get on to the Rio Castilla. So hang tight here. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of weight fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com. That's dryflies.com. And you can view all the fishing products and guide services that they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide services in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit them at www.dryflies.com. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Doc Thompson about the wild rivers of northern New Mexico. If you'd like to ask Doc a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Doc, Gary Lacey in Texas states that I find it frustrating to cast in small brushy streams like the Cimarron. How do you present your fly in this environment? So let's kind of close off the Cimarron by you talking about maybe some of your favorite techniques or approaches on the Cimarron and, you know, to get success there.
Sure, and Gary throws out a great question and one that everybody that's ever fished kind of a small stream with vegetation's had to deal with. And it can be very frustrating. The biggest factor I tell people is to first just be patient. Don't rush things. You know, once you're kind of in the stream moving along and moving into position to work a new bubble line or a new riffle, you know, as you're kind of moving into position and we're kind of studying the water, what you have to also do is study the casting quarters. You know, where can you cast? What's available? You know, if it's super thick, you know, behind you, you may not have room for a back cast, so you'll have to implement a roll cast. You know, it may have to be a situation where you're kind of doing a backhanded roll cast. So we do on the Cimarron a lot of roll casting and then a lot of backhanded roll casts unless, you know, you happen to be ambidextrous. So that's probably the one cast, at least in the public water, because of the vegetation, that probably gets used the most is the roll cast. And the key is being patient, studying the vegetation, your casting lanes. When roll casting's still not adequate enough, then often implement kind of a bow and arrow cast. Of course, for that, you're usually extremely close in with the because of the vegetation. So the key is just being extremely quiet and stealthy as you're moving through the stream. And be open-minded. Don't be locked into what you saw on a video somewhere. You know, there's just a lot of basic practices that apply to any trout stream you're on. But when you're in kind of a specific situation like you see on the Cimarron with the thick vegetation, you do have to kind of, you know, throw some of that, you know, I hate to say throw it out the window, but you have to kind of think outside of the box, be open-minded about a lot of roll casting, you know, a lot of just little kind of dabbling the fly, dapping it into the water, you know, because you may be reaching across some tree branches. That may be the only way you can get a fly in. So, Gary, hang in there and just practice on the roll cast. That's going to be your number one casting technique for the Cimarron.
Sounds good. Okay, let's talk about the Rio Castilla. First of all, where is this now in the beautiful state of New Mexico?
The Rio Castilla is kind of like a lot of places out here. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And you really
can't
have
get
to,
there from here, right?
Right. You really have to be wanting to go to the Rio Castilla to fish it.
Okay.
The Rio Castilla is in extreme north-central New Mexico. There's places the Rio Castilla is basically a mile from the New Mexico-Colorado border. It originates, actually, the Castilla originates on private land in Colorado. and then quickly flows into New Mexico, still on private ranch land. And so it is. It's kind of middle of the nowhere. The best reference point, the best town to reference, is kind of the town of Castilla. The town of Castilla is straight north of Taos, New Mexico, approximately 40 miles. And it's a little teeny town that sits right along the Colorado-New Mexico border. And if you're coming from the town of Taos, you're traveling north on Highway 522. And when you get to the little town of Castilla, there's a small little gas station there, real friendly people. And that's kind of your last spot for anything. So you'll pull off, probably go into the gas station, and then there's a paved road right there that you take for approximately 12 miles. And then it turns into a rough, rough mountain road. And what I mean by that is it's dirt, rock, gravel, bouldery type road. And at that point, you're basically following the Rio Castilla. And so it is, you know, the only way to go there is to want to go there. You're not going to find it by accident by any means. And so that's, you know, closest town is going to be the town of Castilla that you'll find on a map. And as far as driving up to it with that rough mountain road, I always recommend a four-wheel drive vehicle clearance. Not absolutely required, but that's what I highly recommend as far as access to it and where it's located.
And it looks like I'm looking on my Google map here, it looks like from Eagle's Nest, it's basically north-northwest, almost due north from there. What's the distance between those two locations?
From Eagle Nest to fishing on the Rio Castilla,
Yes. You're
looking at drive time about an hour and a half.
Oh, so it is close enough to be able to fish them both in a trip and...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to do, you know, people ask, but you would not want to do the Cimarron in the morning and then the Castilla in the afternoon.
Right.
No.
The next day, is surely it's close enough.
Right. And it's kind of funny, where my house is I've measured it out, it's approximately 11, 12 miles from the Castilla, but it takes me almost 2 hours to get to it. That's just because there's no direct route.
Oh, okay.
You know, just a lot of uncharted, not uncharted, but a lot of mountains between even the town of Eagle Nest and the Castilla that just don't have roads through them.
Sure. Well, tell us what type of river the Rio Castilla is.
Okay, well, the Rio Castilla, once again, it's similar to the Cimarron in the fact that it's kind of a tailwater. It flows out of the Castilla Reservoir, which is on private land. And so that's why it's technically a tailwater, but it doesn't look or act or fish like the tailwater. The Castilla is your classic high mountain meadow stream. The upper elevations are around 9,500 feet. And so you have these just beautiful high mountain valleys with plush green grass coming right down to the edge of the stream. And as far as water features, for the most part, you know, we're seeing a lot of fast riffles that feed into some smaller, deep bend pools, and then that cycle repeats itself. There's a few stretches here and there where there's some good pocket water in the riffles, but for the most part, that's, if you just picture in your mind that classic, untouched, high mountain meadow stream, that's what the Castilla is.
Okay. And what about equipment on there?
As far as equipment, on the Rio Castilla, it's fairly wide open casting conditions. You know, there's some spots that are thick with vegetation, but for the most part, wide open. And so, once again, I'm a big fan of three weights and four weights on the Castilla, and I like the longer rods, even in the open water, because you have space. But then again, mostly because of that ability to do some high stick nymphing and have that longer length of a rod to help hold that much more line up out of the fast water. And then wader-wise, you know, you can definitely most of the time fish it with hip waders. There's some deep bends that if you have to go in for your fly, it might be nice to have some chest waders, but, you know, you could definitely fish it easily with just hip waders.
Are you fishing more in the river then or from the banks?
Here on the Castilla, both. Definitely both. There's some, you know, a lot of the water you can virtually fish all day from the bank and never step into the stream. You know, there's some definite spots, you know, because of currents and because of it being just wide enough, you know, you could easily fish it from within the stream, too.
Okay, Bruce, Hillart, or Hillart, in Longmont, Colorado, asks, he said, I'd like to hear about public access on the Rio Costilla. Also, I'm always curious about the insect hatches. What do you know about, I guess it's Valvidal section?
Sure. There's basically two stretches of public access water for the Rio Costilla. If we start at the top end, and, you know, like we're coming out of the reservoir, out of Castilla Reservoir. Castilla Reservoir is on private property. It's on the Vermejo Park Ranch. And then as it comes out of the reservoir, it's still on Vermejo Park Ranch for a few hundred yards or so. And then you hit the U.S. Forest Service boundary, and that unit or that section of the Forest Service of the Carson National Forest is referred to and known as the Valvidal. What the Valvidal is, it's a 100,000-acre unit, and so that's why we call it the Valvidal section. So from that top end of the Forest Service boundary, or the Valvidal unit, it's going to flow approximately, if you pulled it in a straight line, for about 10 miles. About 6-7 miles along the dirt road, but pulled in a straight line much more. And then after that, it flows into privately owned land that's owned by the Rio Castilla Cooperative Livestock Association, the RCCLA. And there's approximately 6 miles of the Castilla flowing through the RCCLA. And the interesting point is here is that the state of New Mexico has a public fishing lease on that section of the Castilla. Even though it's privately owned, the state has an agreement with the RCCLA. So all total, you're looking at, pulled in a straight line, approximately 15 to 20 miles of public access on the Rio Castilla.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And so it's very easy to find good open water on it. Like I said, most all of it is that classic mountain meadow water.
Okay. We need to, again, take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk more about the Rio Castilla. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as a seasonal snook or tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Doc Thompson about the wild rivers of northern New Mexico. If you'd like to ask Doc a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. I also read something about special trout waters on the Rio Castilla. Is that something you can tell us about?
Sure. In New Mexico Game and Fish designates different streams, lakes, bodies of water as special trout waters. And so they have a special regulation to them. On the Castilla, the Rio Castilla, the special trout waters and what that regulation is, it's artificial flies with barbless hooks or hard lures with, I think it's hard lures with a single barbless hook. And then it's managed as catch and release. And that's all in an effort to help protect the Rio Grande cutthroat trout. Now, part of the regulations for the Rio Castilla is it has a specific opening date. This is where it's a little confusing. The Valvidal section of the Rio Castilla does not open for fishing until July 1st. The RCCLA stretch has no fixed opening date. So you could, if conditions warranted, it could fish it year-round. But the Valvidal section, you cannot fish until July 1st. And that was designated that way to help protect the spawn of the cutthroat.
Right.
So.
Okay. Now, is that the special trout waters designation, is that for the whole river there as far as our...
Yes, that's for all of the Vivadal section, and then for the meadow sections of the RCCLA.
Okay. Okay, so they are designated areas, marked areas?
Yes, for the entire Vivadal section, it's that applies. July 1st, opening date, and then catch and release, and then flies with barbless hooks.
Okay, okay. So this sounds like more of a classic mountain trout stream as far as approach and fishing. Is there anything special you do when you go up there to fish this river?
Sure. It's like all streams. There's definitely some idiosyncrasies that just specifically apply to the Castilla, as there is to the Cimarron, as you know, there is to all trout streams. And some of the, probably the number one biggest thing is that really surprises people the first time they fish it, is how quick the trout will take the fly. They are...
That's a problem?
Well, it's a problem in the fact that they take it and spit it out so fast.
They spit it out. You left that part out.
Yeah. They're lightning quick. In fact, I am a big baseball fan as well, so I kind of nicknamed them the Nolan Ryan fastball strikes. They're that quick. You know, you'll hear some people talk about how they're the fastest trout in the West. And what happens is they just take it and spit it out just so quick that a lot of times if you blink a couple of times back to back, that's how quick some of the takes can be. So that's probably the number one thing you have to kind of be prepared for mentally. And the reason I say mentally is because it can be very frustrating. You know, you get there and, you know, of course you're too slow. And then the next thing you know, any time a dry fly bobbles in the riffle, you're setting the hook. And then you're setting when there's not even a take. And then next thing you know, you're ready to break the rod over your knee. So that's one of the things that throws most people. So a lot of times what people that are up there often will do, you know, especially in those good prime spots, you'll cast the fly and just kind of subconsciously or mentally count 1, 2, set the hook in anticipation of a fish taking the fly.
Uh-huh.
So they are an unbelievably quick when they come up and take and spit out the fly.
What about the hatches on the Rio Castilla? Are they similar to the Cimarron? Or?
Yeah, we do definitely, you know, see some crossover. One of the big things with the Castilla is, especially the Vivadal section, you know, the opening date of July 1st, and that classic mountain meadow stream is, it's a hopper city up there. You know, tie on your favorite hopper and you're going to catch some fish, without a doubt. As far as other insects go, in July, we're still seeing some stoneflies up there. You know, it's kind of near the tail end of the golden stones. If you're fishing the RCCLA section in June, you're going to be, you know, fishing a golden stonefly hatch. Definitely see a good number of caddisflies up there as well. We do see some mayflies. Sometimes the fish will key in on the mayflies, but more times than not, they will key in on stones, and you know, even through July, and then the hoppers and the caddis. There's a sapia stonefly that's about a size 14, and that'll carry through into most years, you know, through July into about the first week or so of August.
Okay.
And then, you know, lots of caddis flies as well, of all sorts and sizes.
Okay. Now, you talked about, as far as public access, it's very accessible. Is this all open, too, as far as just walking up and fishing the streams and so forth?
Yes. Once you've driven up there, you know, the access is pretty obvious. There's, you know, some pullouts. You know, some of them actually have little signs, and some of them are just little pull-offs along the dirt road. And so, you know, you park there, and, you know, some places the stream may be 20 feet from the vehicle. Some places, you know, it could be, you know, a lot farther. There is the dirt road, the Forest Service Road through the Vivadal. I believe it's Forest Service Road 1950. It dead ends. And where it dead ends, you still have a couple of miles of public access to the river. You just can't drive any further.
Okay.
And there's a big iron gate there, and, you know, no mistaking, you can't drive any further.
Okay, so little hike and you get to where everybody's not, right?
That's what you would think.
Yeah. We did have a question on the internet from Bob in Washington, D.C. He says, we know there is not a lot of water in New Mexico to accommodate fishermen from Texas and New Mexico. How are the crowds on these rivers?
Great question. You know, we'll address the Cimarron and the Castilla kind of together. You know, specifically with the Castilla, of course, you know, the opening date of July 1 can be crowded some years. Some years it's not crowded, you know, with just the regional people throughout the Southwest, regional being people within a day's drive. So you have a little bit of that to contend with on July 1st, but the good news is the fish, in theory, haven't seen a fly since the previous September. So it's not like the pressure's going to affect them on that first day. Anywhere you go, probably in the country, if there's public water and it's 4th of July weekend, it'll probably be crowded. Same is true on Labor Day weekend. So if you take those factors into consideration, you know, that leaves a lot of other times. And, you know, like most places, weekends are a little bit more crowded. Weekdays are a little less crowded.
Right.
It's on the Castilla, it's been extremely rare, probably a couple days a year where I get up there and, you know, you're having to fish, you know, within a couple hundred yards of somebody.
Well, that's not bad, yeah.
No, and it handles the pressure pretty darn well. One of the neat things about the Castilla is that being a tailwater, the flows fluctuate. But unlike the Cimarron, it's kind of a fixed schedule on the Castilla. During the week, they have a high flow for irrigation, and on the weekends, they cut the flow back. So on the weekends, when you tend to have a heavier crowd, you also have a lower flow. And so even though you have a heavier crowd, sometimes it can be deceiving because you'll have people kind of fishing but not really, and it's because they're kind of frustrated with the lower flow and the fish are a little bit more skittish. So during the week, you're going to see less people but a higher flow.
Okay, good to know, so, good to know.
Yeah, and
we're running out of time here, so I want to move on to the Rio Grande here. Again, locate us. Where is the Rio Grande in the scheme of things about what we've been talking about, and what kind of river is it?
Sure. As far as the Rio Grande, as we talked about early in the show, it starts up in the San Juan Mountains of Colorado and then flows down through, you know, that upper Rio Grande Valley through Creede and down through basically San Luis Valley in the very southern end of Colorado. And then it crosses the border into New Mexico and quickly flows into the Rio Grande Gorge. And then eventually the Rio Grande will flow past the towns of Cuesta, past the town of Taos, all the way eventually to the Gulf of Mexico. So that's kind of the basic path of the Rio Grande. As far as fishing for trout, we're kind of talking about that Taos area. Actually, if a person has a map, you can find a small town just south of Taos called Pilar. And so the trout, you know, will be as far down as around Pilar, and then all the way up north, almost to that Colorado border, through that Rio Grande Gorge, which is 70-plus miles, 80 miles in length. And so you have that much trout water there. It flows through the deep canyon, the Rio Grande Gorge, and the gorge depth ranges anywhere from basically 1,000 feet. Some areas, you know, it's only a few hundred feet deep. And as far as water goes, you have a tremendous mix, and it's kind of broken down into sections. The upper end near the Colorado border, the Rio Grande, sees a lot of long riffles and deep runs and pools. As it gets deeper into the canyon, it turns into a lot of wicked and wild, crazy pocket water and big plunge pools and fast, deep runs. So there's, you know, a tremendous amount of trout water. There's basically four names or four sections. The uppermost, you know, from the Colorado border down about 25 miles or so is what is called Ute Mountain Run. And as far as trout there, it's pretty slim as far as having a lot of trout. And then after that, after the Ute Mountain Run, the next section is the wild and scenic river area of the Rio Grande. And that's approximately 15 miles or so in length. And that's probably, as far as hiking access, probably the best place. The Bureau of Land Management manages it. There's a number of campsites up on top. There's a number of well-marked and maintained trails that will take you down into the Rio Grande Gorge and take you right down to the river. And that whole area is all pure hiking access, and it's, you know, anywhere from, you know, 40-minute hike down to an hour-plus hike down. And, of course, you have to hike back up, which usually takes longer, you know, especially after a day of fishing. And then as we're flowing down towards the town of Taos, the Wild and Scenic River area is the bottom end of that is marked by the Red River confluence. And so that's where basically the Taos box starts, and it goes from the Red River confluence all the way down for about 18, 20 miles. And then you have the Pilar section, which is about 10 miles. You have about 5 miles or so below the town of Pilar that hold trout. And then if you can take a paved road from the town of Pilar back up that parallels the river, and the access through Pilar is very easy, you know, anywhere from 30-second walk from your vehicle to a couple of minutes.
Okay. Now, the area that I've read about that sounds pretty rigorous was the area in the Wild and Scenic and the Gorge area. Is that the, because there's some kind of pretty hairy stories about the hike in and hike out of that area.
Right. It's definitely wild. You know, it's hiking, so the fishing pressures and just general river pressures extremely light compared to, say, Pilar, where you have around the town of Pilar, you know, a lot of activity. You have lots of fishing, a lot of people fishing, but a lot of whitewater rafting, a lot of kayaking going on there, too. And so all that can affect the fishing. And so anywhere you have a chance to hike in, most of the time the fishing's going to be better because of less pressure. And in that Wild and Scenic River section, you know, you're looking at a handful of well-maintained trails that you can hike down. And well-maintained is kind of sometimes misleading. There's well-maintained marked trails with lots of switchback, and those take a lot longer because of the switchbacks, but they're easier going. The other kind of trails that we will take are what we call, or I call mountain goat trails, which aren't marked. You just have to know where they are, which means you have to go with someone who knows where they are if you don't. And those are literally, you're just climbing down the canyon, and then you're climbing back up at the end of the day, at the end of after fishing. I always encourage people, if they're going on their own, to take the maintained trails. You know, lots of switchbacks, and they're still on the steep side, but the switchbacks make it a lot easier going. Some of those maintained trails, if you're keeping your eye out, will take you along some petroglyphs, which are always neat and interesting to see. And then once you get to the bottom, you know, you're still in for a physical day. You know, it's especially in that Wild and Scenic River section just outside of Cuesta, New Mexico. You know, it's boulders after boulders after boulders. Not much wading goes on there, mostly fishing from the bank and then also rock hopping or boulder hopping out from the bank to be able to cover more water. So you definitely, on that Wild and Scenic River section, definitely need to be in pretty good physical shape and, you know, hopefully have good legs and a good back and no problems with your heart.
Sure, yeah. Now, what about floating that river? The Rio Grande's a pretty good-sized river in Colorado. Is it floatable in any of these sections?
Not from the standpoint, really, of fishing, no. And right now it's under runoff, and this is the time of year that whitewater rafting takes place on it. The runoff usually starts to subside in mid to late August, and so from the fishing standpoint, you know, we'll fish it, you know, it's September and October when the flows are pretty low. And because of the big mass of boulders, you know, it just doesn't lend well at all to float fishing.
Okay.
So it's almost exclusively wade fishing.
And that's in the Wild and Scenic area, right?
But, yes.
But what about north of that or south of that down by the...
A person could float north of there, but the access is limited. There's no road right to the river even north of there. You'd still have to hike in, you know, at that point, an inflatable.
So it's not, you know, it's just not one of those typical Western drift boat rivers at any point, really.
Not at all. It's night and day different from what you see in the Colorado side.
Okay.
Now, there's some sections in Pilar, if a person has a boat, a drift boat, you know, or even a, you know, an inflatable, you could easily float some of the sections around Pilar, yes.
Okay, and we're going to have to wrap it up here pretty quick, but I'm going to try to run through a couple of these questions. Tom Clark, Boise, Idaho, says, how does Rio Grande fish in the winter and early spring?
Oh, great question. The Rio Grande in the winter and early spring can definitely fish. The key components are going to be water temperature, like most places in the wintertime. Water temperature is key. On the Rio Grande, during that time of year, kind of the peak water, warmest part of the day for water temperatures is going to be late afternoon, early evening from about 3 o'clock on. It happens to coincide with when the sun is on the west side of the canyon, so you're starting to lose your sunlight. But the water temperatures are holding because of the deep canyon walls. And so that time of year, as far as insect activity, we're seeing lots of midges, and probably the nickname for the most common midge we see in the wintertime and early spring is what we call a snowfly midge, basically a black-bodied midge, and it has kind of a grayish, whitish-type wing, and that's kind of where it's gotten its nickname, the snowfly midge. And a lot of times, if you're just kind of walking the bank line, looking at the soft pockets and the edge water, during that late afternoon time frame, you can, on some of those warmer days, see some fish rising, or you'll see them rising at the tail end of the pools and the tail end of the runs. And so it is fishable. You know, if a person's going to, you know, travel great distances and spend a week on it in the dead of winter, you know, it's something you'd plan for the afternoons only.
Okay. And based upon what you just said a few minutes ago, the time that you really don't want to come for the Rio Grande is what, from, like, say, April to end of July? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, basically, most years when runoff kicks in on the Rio Grande, it's going to kick in April. You know, if it's a real light snow year, you know, some years April will fish great. And if the runoff's not an issue, there's a phenomenal caddisfly hatch in April into early May. It's just unbelievable to fish. But most of the time, you know, we already have heavy enough runoff, it's unfishable.
Yeah.
And then that runoff, you know, starts to subside late in the summer, and, you know, usually by 1st of September is when it'll start to fish, and then all the way through October and early November.
Rod in Amarillo again asks, what is your go-to area on the Rio Grande? Which area do you like?
Rod will have to call me.
It's going to cost you some money, Rod. Like, you're going to have to hire him, Rod.
No, the go-to stretch is without a doubt the Wild and Scenic River area.
Okay.
You know, and then there's three trails, Big Arsenic, Little Arsenic, and then La Junta Trail. Those all three trails go to the bottom, but they connect once you're on the bottom. And so if you take, you know, any of those three trails down, you know, they're going to take you to some good, fun fishing water. Now, it's mostly lots of crazy wild pocket water, a lot of, you know, physical fishing just from the standpoint of having to boulder hop and rock hop your way through there. But, you know, it's definitely probably the, you know, the best stretch with the most or highest fish concentration, I think.
Okay, one final question here, and it's kind of a combo between Mike in Illinois and Silas in Missouri. They both ask in a different way. Silas asks, if you were to have 5 days to fish, which stream would you fish and when? And Mike asks, if one of the rivers or streams and you had to pick one, which one would you pick? So they're asking for your favorite. And if they're going to make one trip out to New Mexico, is there one of these three that you would recommend?
Sure. You know, there are all three of the ones we discussed are my favorite.
They're all different, as you've been
saying. Right. They're all drastically different, and they all fish good at different times. But if I had to just pick one, it would be the Cimarron.
Okay.
And then that's a combination of reasons. One is just the numbers of trout, you know, extremely healthy wild brown trout all up and down the Cimarron.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to go expecting big fish, but a lot of fun wild browns. Lends well to dry fly fishing, dry and dropper fishing. It's consistent throughout the whole season of May through September. So if I'm picking just one, it would be the Cimarron.
Okay, great.
So that's
terrific.
The one.
Well, we got to wrap it up now, Doc, but we crammed a lot in there, and you gave a lot of great information tonight, so appreciate it.
Well, thanks.
stick with me a few more minutes. We've got some gifts to give away, and a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, and that $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers, Boulder, Colorado. So stay tuned.
Sure.
Just as Lance Armstrong says, live strong, there's a fly fishing organization that's helping women battle cancer to fish on. It's Reeling and Healing Midwest. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature and support network, which in turn renews the spirit and hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and to learn more about how you can help support their retreats, go to reelingandhealingmidwest.org. That's reelingandhealingmidwest.org. Or call them at 866-237-5725. That's 866-237-5725. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave us your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes, and the winners for the drawings are randomly selected from our database, and you would have had to already have registered there to be in tonight's drawing. It's a little too late now, but in the future, make sure you do get registered so you don't miss out on the possibility of winning one of these prizes. The winners are randomly drawn from that database, and if you do win, we will contact you after the show and tell you how you can receive your gifts. So here we go. The first thing that we're going to give away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you want to learn more about that great organization, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And you can educate yourself there. Let's see here. Okay, so our winner for that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers is Ashik Raman in New York. Ashik Raman in New York. So congratulations, and I know you'll enjoy your membership, and if you already have one, we'll get it extended for you. And so, Ashik, congratulations. And now we'll give away a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, which you can learn more about at flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. And it is a great magazine out of Calgary, Canada, that has lots of great photography in it and wonderful how-to articles. And our winner for that is Rex Caraway in Colorado. Rex Caraway. So congratulations, Rex. And I know you'll enjoy that subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. Okay, and now what we do here is come up with a question here that we talked about during the show. And the first person to answer this question correctly and with your name and location will win the $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. You'll be able to redeem that either in person in their store or online in their online store at frontrangeanglers.com. So a great fly shop out of Boulder, Colorado. Okay, let's see who we got here now. You're going to have to fill in that form on our homepage and give us your answer there. Doc just talked about a special fly, a midge, that appears on the Rio Grande during a certain time of the year. What's the name of that midge? What's the name of that midge? And let's see, Doc here, if anybody was listening.
Well, let's hope so.
So I'm checking now. They're rapidly typing, I'm sure. And we'll see if we get a winner here. And we have, oh, a local. I don't know. He's probably got some inside information. His answer, this is Bill Atkinson in Taos, and his answer is the snowfly.
Yeah, right? That's an inside answer, but not for me. So that's the correct one, Bill.
That's the correct one. Okay, Bill, you just won yourself a $20 gift certificate from Front Range Anglers. Mm-hmm. So, Bill, what you want to do is either in that same text box or you can send me an email at info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com. You want to send me your name again, your address, phone number, and email address so that we can get that certificate to you. And then we'll take care of that. So great. Congratulations, Bill. And I know you'll enjoy. You can always use some extra equipment, flies or something. So always comes in handy. Okay. Now, to finish up here, I just want to say thank you, Doc, for taking your time out of your busy schedule. And I know you're starting to get into your busy schedule here. So thanks for taking time with us and enlightening us about these wild rivers of northern New Mexico. I really appreciate your time with us.
Well, thank you, Roger, for the opportunity to participate and discuss it.
Yeah, it's been great. I learned a lot, and now I know next time I'm down in that country where I need to go. So I appreciate it. Well, our next broadcast will be on June 16th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we're going to interview Andy Mill, and our topic for the show will be a passion for tarpon. Andy Mill has a passion for tarpon and has 11 tarpon tournament wins to show for it, more than any other fly fisher. If you want to learn how to hook up and land trophy tarpon, you need to listen to this show. So we'll see you then. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, Keeney's Fly Shop here in Marquette River Lodge, sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.